Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Friday, June 24th of 2022. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we hear about how families are accessing the outdoors at Calwood Education Center. After that, we hear about how researchers are using beavers to fight climate change. Then it's Sports Talk with Jimmy Searfoss and, as always, .org, our weekly segment on local nonprofits. At 8:30, Connections comes your way. This week, Duncan Campbell and Lisa Graves talk about the dangers of an autocratic Supreme Court. At 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative will bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. That's all still ahead, but first, these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Kiara Damari.
Boulder County officials charged a woman in Gum Barrel with a petty offense Thursday for starting April's Tally Ho Fire, which burned about 10 acres of grassland and caused about $20,000 worth of damage. Helen Shirovakova started the fire after spreading still smoldering ashes across her garden, believing it would act as a good fertilizer. Dry conditions have caused high and dangerous fire weather in Boulder County and across the state this year. According to the Daily Camera, the woman, who called the police when she noticed a fire in her backyard, cooperated with officials. The city downgraded their initial charges against the woman from a misdemeanor to a petty offense, which carries a maximum of 10 days in jail and a $300 fine. The Boulder police are charging a 17-year-old girl with 2 counts of vehicular homicide. The girl, who was intoxicated, crashed her car into oncoming traffic back in April while driving the wrong way down the Foothills Parkway. The crash resulted in 2 deaths. The driver received her charges Thursday. She was also given a DUI, vehicular assault, a minor possession of alcohol, and a charge for driving on the wrong side of the highway. According to the Daily Camera, prosecutors said the investigation into how the juvenile initially got the alcohol and where she was drinking is still under investigation and could end in further charges. The CDC is urging parents of toddlers to get their kids vaccinated. KGNU's Luis Lacone has more.
Parents whose children are under 5 will start receiving messages from the State Health Department today. The messages will urge parents to get their children the COVID-19 vaccine before preschool starts up again. According to the Denver Post, last week the Center for Disease Control and Prevention recommended that children between 6 months and 5 years receive either 3 doses of the Pfizer vaccine or 2 of the Moderna shot. Both contain the same ingredients as shots given to adults and older children, but in smaller doses. Heather Roth, Immunization Branch Chief of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, told the Denver Post that it takes between 11 and 16 weeks to complete the Pfizer series and 4 to 8 weeks for the Moderna. She said that 381 children received their first shots Wednesday, and the number will likely rise as reports come in throughout the day. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
Over 50 medical professionals across Colorado released a letter telling Congress to recognize gun violence as a public health emergency and to push legislation to help curb it this week. The release comes on the heels of a Supreme Court decision from Thursday that struck down a New York law limiting the carry of concealed guns outside the home. The letter began by saying, "Gun violence is a public health emergency that has devastated too many families in America, and we urge our members of Congress to end years of inaction and implement common-sense gun safety measures that can help save lives." The U.S. Senate began pushing legislation earlier this week to provide more thorough background checks when someone purchases a gun, with support from U.S. Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado, who has advanced laws to prevent gun violence. Former CU Buff Jabari Walker was selected in the second round of the NBA draft. KGNU's Jimmy Searfoss has more.
Earlier this year, University of Colorado men's basketball center Jabari Walker announced his entrance into the NBA draft. Last night, Walker was the 57th overall pick in the second round of the draft by the Portland Trail Blazers. Walker was only a sophomore when he announced his entrance into the draft. Last season, he led the Pac-12 in rebounds, averaging 9.4 per game while shooting 46% from the floor. It is not a guarantee that Walker makes the main team, but he will most likely play during the NBA Summer League, where he will be able to showcase his talents both offensively and defensively.
For KGNU, this has been Jimmy Searfoss.
Today's weather is warm with a chance of afternoon rain across the Front Range. Clear skies tonight. Boulder has a high of 86 and a low of 65. Denver, a high of 88 and a low of 62. Fort Collins, a high of 86 and a low of 57. Outside the studio, it's 70 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
The Calwood Education Center has been striving to spread outdoor education to a diverse population of kids and young adults for nearly 40 years. They have recently unveiled their Latino summer camps. KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with counselor camper Mexican-American Jennifer Tafts during the preparation of breakfast about the importance of introducing a camping experience to Latino families.
Tell us a little bit about you, what you do here at the camp.
Well, I'm a counselor for Calwood, and I'm half Mexican, half American, so I'm dual citizenship. So I come here and I try to help more Latino families know that in Colorado we have 50% of free public areas to camp around, so they can do this. Basically, everywhere they can find a free camping ground, they can have this activity, and it's motivating them to get out and learn that they can be surrounded by nature.
You have a really good point. In Mexico, 99% of the land belongs to private owners. Even if the land inside is protected, it's not easy access to people to just go camping anywhere. How is the experience different for families that live in Mexico to access the land and here?
Yeah, well, a lot of Latino families, when they come to the U.S., they're not aware that camping is free. So Calwood is really interested in letting them know that this opportunity is not only here in Calwood, that they can do it all over the place. Also, in Mexico, it's more expensive to go out camping because you have to pay for the land. All of the camping gear is more expensive in Mexico because most of it is imported. And here, everybody has gear and you can find it for like really good deals. And that makes it accessible for everyone. I feel like it's a way of making them see that there's more community than they thought there was at the first time. And just to ensure that they feel welcomed in the U.S. We actually have a volunteer here in site that she just got to the U.S. a few months ago, and she was telling me that she doesn't have any friends at the moment. So I feel like it's a good activity or community that you can grow. So once you come here as a stranger, and then you go out, and now you realize that there's maybe like 6 Latino families more in your area. So that's fun. And then you have this history and this connection from this place and nature and just playing around with your kids become friends, and then you just have more community when you thought you may not have any where you were. And I feel like Latinos come here and they're just trying to make a life for themselves. I know that not everyone comes in the same circumstances. Some of us are lucky, some of us aren't, and this just makes people realize that they're not alone. So I feel like that's how this program really helps. It's not only bringing Latino families to the outside and letting them know that they can take these opportunities, but also make that sense of community.
A sense of community is extremely important, I think. And also accessibility. These families here, they need to pay very little money normally just to be part of the whole thing, and everybody's cooking together and everybody's really coming along. We all work. The breakfast was done by women this morning, and yesterday night the men cooked for all of us, so... Like right now, Emma, the main organizer, is calling us to have the breakfast right now. And she's saying a peso. And that means that it's really cheap, but that you need to get in line to eat. The group here mainly is from Aurora.
Some of them are from Zacatecas. Some of them are from Veracruz. Like, they're just from all over the republics, the Mexican Republic. So I don't know. It's just fun to meet people from all around and just talk about like home. I feel like it also helps with getting a little bit homesick sometimes. And it's fairly cheap to come. It's $25 a person. And we do a lot of activities. I feel like you get your money's worth. So we provide the tents, we provide the food. We provide everything to cook it with, so you don't have to bring like all of the things, and just that hustle sometimes scares people. So I feel like we also help them get a good introduction to it for them to get excited. Maybe next time they'll do it all by themselves. And we also try and give them something to take home that will start their experience. So on this trip specifically, we're going to give them some camel backpacks with water tanks on them. So maybe they'll go hiking afterwards and just have that to make it easier. And we also do some activities to help them engage more with nature. We go fishing. Well, it's fishing release because we're not taking the fishes home until the end of the summer, when everybody is able to catch a fish. And we also make sure that there's enough fish for everyone to get that experience of catching a fish and just get excited about camping and the outdoors. And I think some kids were excited because in the morning they woke up before everybody else and were able to see deers around, and they were just excited about nature. And I think that's the whole part of Cowood.
So now the families are going to have breakfast, and then they're going to go and experience fishing, hiking around, and getting exposed to what this beautiful forest provides, especially after 2 years of pandemic, a fire that devastated half of Calwood. It's back. Everything is green. It's looking amazing. And it's the right time to come up and enjoy the outdoors. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo-Better.
A partnership between governmental agencies and university researchers has modern-day trappers searching the state for beavers. But they aren't after pelts. Instead, they're using the large rodent to lessen the effects of drought. Justin Higginbottom has more.
I'm at the chalky slopes of the Book Cliffs in the desert of southeastern Utah. A short, dusty drive from the highway, and there's a leafy oasis along the shallow Price River. I'm with Christine Sandback. She's a graduate student at Utah State University, and she has a beaver in a cage that she's trying to get a read on.
Whenever we interact with them, we record their behavior, so she kind of turned away, so that would be fearful, so I'm just going to write that down.
Sandback helps to trap and relocate beavers in Utah, and she's gotten to know quite a few.
Yeah, it's interesting. They really do have different behaviors. Our last one that we did, he was super aggressive, like, the whole time. He was a big male. He was kind of scary. He would hiss and lunge at us.
But this beaver is calm with her back turned to us. Sandback named her Ice Baby after finding her in the cold waters of a high-elevation canyon.
We're just trapping for a landowner. She has a really amazing beaver complex on her property, but it's just gotten out of hand for her.
Although Ice Baby finds herself some 60 miles south of her home waters, she's actually lucky.
Before this project, usually the solution would be lethal removal. The state would come in and remove beavers for them.
Instead of being killed, the hope is that Ice Baby will go to work for the state. Prolonged drought is drying up sections of this river and threatening fish, including three endangered species. Sandback is working in a partnership with the university and various state and federal agencies, using beavers to help ecosystems like this one.
Oh, beavers are great for the environment.
That's Julie Young. She's a professor at USU working on this project. Beavers build dams to create ponds they can dip into and avoid predators. On that stretch of the Price River, there's a number of human-made beaver dam analogs, or BDAs, to help Ice Baby get started.
The idea is that maybe if we have beavers out there and they have BDAs they can build off of, that they will dam up some water and let it trickle year-round.
And that will help the fish. Young says researchers around the country are studying beaver benefits. For example, in Colorado, their wetlands have acted as breaks for wildfires.
And so everything kind of benefits, or has the potential to benefit, when there's beavers around creating more marsh habitats than otherwise might be in some of these environments.
This project is a bit of a test case. After all, it's not an area you might think to find the animal.
What's unique about this is it's a desert river system, and that's more rare or less common.
Young says that there's some really nice beaver dam complexes on the nearby San Rafael River.
And that's what the Price River could look like if beavers are in sufficient number and decide to dam it up.
There was once up to 200 million beavers in North America, but the fur trade of previous centuries decimated that population. Luckily for beavers, the price of their pelts have plummeted. The top hats made from their fur are out of fashion for most. There's now only 10 to 15 million beavers on the continent, As the West's population has expanded, beavers are once again in conflict with humans, this time with landowners. That's where Nate Norman comes in. He's another modern-day trapper.
In a lot of ways, it's similar to the old-time trappers. We're looking for the signs of where the beavers are moving and where they're active, and then luring them into areas with either food or scent.
Although a big difference with past mountain men is he's using non-lethal methods. Norman's a biologist with the Beaver Ecology and Relocation Center at USU. He says the state passes on reports of nuisance beavers, and then he'll reach out to property owners and see if they'd prefer relocation to extermination. He also educates them on the usefulness of beavers.
And we've had some successes where people have been okay to leave the beaver on their site and not actually have them removed.
He says in the last 5 years, he's seen a change of heart toward beavers. During drought, ranchers have especially come around to the benefits of beavers building stock ponds to provide water for cattle.
They realize that when they go out and build a stock pond and it blows out in the springtime, they've got to go back up there and fix it. But if a beaver builds a pond and it blows out in the springtime, the beaver go fix it.
They also help grow riparian vegetation used for animal feed, also important in a drought. Back at the Price River, Ice Baby is acting a little less fearful. She's in view of the water and gnawing at her cage. Sandback points out an artificial dam.
So that is a BDA right there. So it was built last year. They used to have a ton of juniper and stuff in them. They were way bigger, but they've gotten blown out with floods and stuff.
Workers built 70 BDAs last year in the state. If Ice Baby likes this spot, then Sandback's job is done.
So that's sort of the goal here, is to have this feedback of you build the BDAs, then translocate beavers. BDAs make habitat better for the beavers, and then in turn the beavers maintain the BDAs, so there's no extra resources going into that.
Sandback opens the cage and Ice Baby waddles down the dirt path to the water. She slips into the shallow river and gracefully swims away, not even a look back in gratitude. Sandback hopes she sticks around, though, and makes a home of it. Justin Higginbottom, Rocky Mountain Community Radio.
You're listening to KGNU's Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Up next, it's Sports Talk with Jimmy Searfoss.
Breaking news, somebody is talking about sports on KGNU. Reports have come in saying it is Jimmy Searfoss. Hello and welcome back to Sports Talk with Jimmy here on KGNU. I am your host, Jimmy Searfoss, and the entire state of Colorado still has hockey fever, and the Colorado Avalanche are just one win away from the Stanley Cup, but they would not have been there without Nazem Kadri, a center for the Avs, who has been one of the most impactful players on the ice when he has been playing. But he has also had one of the toughest roads of any player this postseason. It began in the second round of the 2022 NHL playoffs against the St. Louis Blues. In Game 3 of this series, there was a play in front of the goal where Kadri was skating towards it with the puck attempting to score. He would end up losing control, leading to a collision with Blues goalie Jordan Binnington. Now, Binnington would end up getting injured on the collision and would end up missing the rest of the series. A series the Avalanche would go on to win. The play was purely an accident, but Kadri had been suspended from games in the past for illegal collisions before, so many felt this was a targeted attack, including Binnington, who would throw a water bottle at Kadri on the way to the locker room while Kadri was in the middle of a post-game interview. To make matters worse, after the game, Blues fans took to social media and began making racist threats towards Kadri. Now, Kadri is a Muslim and was born in Canada, but his family has historical trails back to Lebanon. These were the basis for many of the threats aimed at him. They would end up getting so bad that the Avalanche began working with St. Louis police to ensure the safety of its players. The Blues head coach reacted to the threats by providing no comment during a press conference. Kadri responded to the threats by scoring a hat trick in the next game of the series, meaning he scored 3 goals in 1 game. He did this in the presence of an arena full of Avalanche fans. The slogan "Stand with Naz" became a rally cry for Avalanche fans in an effort to stand up to the racist threats. The third round of the playoffs against the Edmonton Oilers wasn't any easier for Kadri. In the third game of the series, Kadri was faced with another controversy when he was boarded by Evander Kane, leading to an injury that would go on to need surgery. Boarding is when a player violently pushes another player into the boards that surround the ice. Avalanche coach Jared Bednar called it the most dangerous play in hockey in a press conference after the game. It was called a penalty and earned Kane a one-game suspension. Kadri would get surgery on his thumb the next day and would be out for the next 18 days. In the time he healed, his team would advance to the Stanley Cup final against the Tampa Bay Lightning, and Kadri wasn't about to miss out. For the first time in his 13-year career, he made his debut in Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Finals on Wednesday. He would go on to score the game-winning goal in overtime to put his Avalanche up 3-1 in the series. Expect Kadri back on the ice for Game 5, taking place Friday at 6 o'clock right here in Denver. And it could be a big one. For KGNU, this has been Sports Talk with Jimmy Searfoss with me, your host, Jimmy Searfoss. Until next week.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's look at local nonprofits.
Hi, this is Chris Schultz with KGNU, and I'm here with Sarah Thompson from Rehabilitative Rhythms. Sarah, you want to tell us a little bit about your organization?
Rehabilitative Rhythms is improving access to music for individuals of all abilities and also improving access to music therapy services. We've been able to put together Colorado's first adaptive music lab where people can come and try out equipment and work with a music therapist who can help match them to equipment. People have an interest in music, but they just aren't quite sure how to access it given their limitations. Music can be accessible to really anyone, even if they only have the ability to move one hand or to use their head. There's all kinds of adaptive equipment out there, but there just isn't a lot of knowledge or awareness of the equipment. So the goal of the lab is to make music accessible to anyone. We also do consultations and work directly with music educators so that they have more tools to make music accessible to the students that they work with. Music therapy is the use of music to help an individual reach their goals. And at Rehabilitative Rhythms, we really take a neuroscience approach to what we do. We know so much about how music is processed in the brain. Music therapists are highly trained, and at Rehabilitative Rhythms, we have master's level music therapists creating custom interventions to the individual and their diagnosis and their preferences, trying to get measurable outcomes to where the family can see and the individual can see. One of the easiest examples is the example of an individual who is a stroke survivor and may not be able to get words out, but in many cases, they can still sing. We can use that ability that's still intact to help retrain their ability to speak. When we add in rhythm, we're able to help someone working on a motor goal or walking again after a brain injury. We also provide social groups. We've been able to hand match kids and adults actually based on what their current level of skill is with social skills and language. We've put together these really small social groups and use music in a lot of fun ways to facilitate these social connections and friendships. And we created Colorado's first aphasia choir, and aphasia impacts speech. And so our Rocky Mountain Aphasia Choir is a celebration of what people can still do. Our Rocky Mountain Aphasia Chorale puts on 2 concerts a year, and those are always listed at aphasiachorale.org. Due to a generous grant from Developmental Pathways, we actually have some free consultations available in our Adaptive Music Lab. And these consultations are specific to individuals with a developmental delay or developmental difference. People can sign up at possiblewithmusic.org.
For their link and another listen, go to our blog at kgnu.org/dot.org.
that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Special thanks to Kiara Damari, Jimmy Sirfas, Rosanna Longobetter, Luis Licon, and Chris Schultz. Stay tuned for Connections just after these news headlines from the BBC. You're listening to KGNU. We've gotten news that the Supreme Court has overturned Roe v. Wade. I'm sure we'll have more information about that coming up later today.